We're going to start our meeting on rules. We don't have a quorum, but we can start our public hearings. And so with that said, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3473. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator and then invite some people up to testify.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Members of the committee, House Bill 3473 requires school districts that include a public high school to adopt plans to increase student voter registration and voting in elections. It establishes specific plan requirements, including a requirement that students have an opportunity to register to vote at school, and a further requirement that students receive information about activities related to voting that are prohibited by law and penalties for those activities. Lawmakers in several states are considering measures to further increase youth voter participation on high school campuses. In New Jersey, there's an Assembly Bill 2752 that would require public and private schools to provide voter registration materials for graduating high school students upon issuance of a diploma. The bill, introduced in 2008, was adopted by the Assembly, was reported out favorably by the Senate Education Committee, and has had its second reading as of March 9, 2009. In Kentucky, House Bill 155 would require voter registration information to be provided to students in the 12th grade. House Bill 155 was passed by the Kentucky House on a 98-0 vote on February 24, 2009. It is currently in their Senate Rules Committee. Proponents of efforts to increase voter registration and voting among high school students assert that citizens who become politically engaged at a young age become lifelong voters, bringing more people into the voting process at an earlier age and maintaining that involvement throughout their adult lives.
So with that, Representative Wingert. And you can...
April Hill.
April, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It brings me a great deal of pleasure to introduce to you April Hill, who's a constituent of mine, who contacted me a couple of months ago and said as part of her senior project that she'd like to get a bill passed. And I said, well, that's really easy to do, so let's just sit down and write the bill and we'll get it passed for you. She has a really great idea. We passed a bill last session. I wasn't here, but we passed Senate Bill, the body passed Senate Bill 951, which required community colleges and colleges to have a voter registration outreach plan on their campuses. April's idea is to extend that to the high schools in Oregon so that students who are coming of age to vote have some plan in front of them. There is some mechanism for showing them how they might get registered to vote and participate in their first election. And at that, I'll let April take it over.
My name is April Hill. I live in Tigard, and I go to Southridge High School. I'm a senior, and I am 18 years old. And like Representative Wingert mentioned, this is a part of my senior project at my high school. It has led me to where I am now. And when I, last year, turned 18 on October 21st, I was incredibly excited that I had the ability to vote in the presidential election, that I could now become a part of making decisions in my community, and I didn't really understand why other people weren't as excited as I was. I was so excited. However, I mistakenly thought that I had to be 18 to register, while a 17-year-old can register to vote. And that's when I realized that a lot of youth right now don't know the ins and outs and the legalities of voter registration and of voting. As is on the graph, the 18 to 24 age group has been continually the lowest voting percentage. And this is the group that should care the most. This is my generation, and we're the generation that's coming into the world. We're the ones that are going to be inheriting it, and we need to care about our future. My school has always had a few seniors, a handful, who have done senior projects like I have and started some campaign, but this is not an ongoing program. This is something that they start again every year, that different people start and they struggle with. There are other schools who have also had voter registration drives, campaigns. An article in the Daily Tribune talks about Waltham High School in Massachusetts, where a teacher manages a voter registration campaign, and he says that kids come up to him all the time saying, if it wasn't done here, I might not register. And he continues saying that even though there's no penalty for not voting, other people in other countries walk for miles and miles to vote. And it surprises me that youth take this opportunity for granted. Another school in Martin County, Florida, has a Pledge to Vote competition annually where they try and register as many people to vote as possible. And I understand that it is hard to motivate students. I'm a student myself. It's hard to motivate them when they feel like they're just one drop in 300 million people in the country. And it's hard to motivate them when they feel like something is out of their way, such as acquiring voter registration pamphlets. So I feel like that's one of the many reasons that some of my peers, even when they turned 17 or even 18, didn't register because it was out of their way. And I feel like this could make it much more possible and much more easy for young voters to start on that path. Without registration in high schools, I think a lot of teens and a lot of adults won't enter the real world with real knowledge of the legalities of voting, of how and where to submit registration papers or pamphlets, of how to change their community, or of how to be an active citizen. Those things are very important to me, especially being an active citizen, but how to participate in one's community and knowing the legalities that we're living in a democracy should be important to every citizen, I believe, and should be available to every citizen. Senate Bill 951, which it was passed in 2008 or 2007, requires this for universities. It's specifically for universities, so it has campus locations, and it requires that deadline information and legalities and where and how are all informed to students. This bill is in the same spirit as that, but I want to bring this to the younger generation and start them on as soon as possible. Students in college have sort of already made up their mind, I feel, more than students in high school about what their path as far as voter registration and as far as democracy is going to take them. But someone in high school hasn't made that up yet. They're just entering that, and I believe that starting them on the right foot in the real world is going to make an incredibly big difference. Oregon has been one of the top states in the country as far as voter registration and voting comes. We have a vote-by-mail system, which I take pride in because I live in Oregon and I like it very much. And we even have a program that will send reminders via text to someone's phone to vote. And I'd like to keep Oregon the leading state in voter registration and keep us updated so we can be sort of a leader, I suppose. And I'm speaking for my generation and for my community, and I think this is something that could be crucial for the coming generation. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, do you let that member of your committee ask questions?
He is the most prolific question answer on our committee.
Your committee. Sorry, Representative. I can't see you very well. Will you sit up, please?
Yeah. Ms. Hill, I'll excuse the person who's sitting next to you. How do you, first of all, thank you for bringing this to the legislature. Thank you for going through the process and having the courage to do so, especially with representative next to you. But how would you, do you have any fears this might be politicized?
How do you mean politicized?
In the indoctrination of students, could not the atmosphere of a political election be politicized by urging 18-year-olds to vote?
What I'd like, Chair Roblin and Representative Garrard, what I'd like to emphasize with this bill is simply voter registration, not parties or not who someone wants to vote for, but that someone becomes active in their community, simply.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? I guess I have a couple. One, who would do the training of the people who are going to give out the registration cards and have that conversation so that it's kind of that whole idea of nonpartisan, just registration? Who do you think would do the training of the people that had to give the cards and give out the information?
I think I'd like to answer
that. Well, this is a great question, and we certainly believe that there are some questions that need to be answered with the bill, including whether or not it has a cost, and secondly, how that, what kind of shape or form that's going to take. I think the idea at least what I got from April, she'd like this to be student-led. So I think the idea is her focus is more on just providing the registration forms and making sure that students know how to register and that those the whole mechanism for registering is available to them at school. What form that takes, it would be my preference probably to not over-dictate in the bill and to allow the school the leeway to design it in whichever way is going to work for them.
I guess my second one, as a high school principal for a number of years, I really believed in registration, that that's an important thing. And so different groups would come and ask if they could set up a school and do registration. And I generally said yes to anybody who wanted to do that. It created problems every once in a while because there were certain times when it would be a Republican and then the Democrats would all be upset. I said, well, you can have a sit right next to him, do it too. This to me is how do you get people registered? I liked it when the League of Women Voters decided they wanted to help out because that made it a little easier at times. But the way people go about doing it does have an influence on how people sign up and register and so on. It creates kinds of those other kinds of conflicts. The same can be true with your student government. There are very, very assertive members of student government who have a bent politically, and all of a sudden you find an amazing number of all one party coming out of a particular high school. So I guess I have always prided myself in trying to let people make their own decisions about how to get there, and I want to make sure that it is just giving them out and making sure that they figure out how to get them in themselves or at least giving the information how to do that. So I guess I would like to see a little bit more of that. But I appreciate what this bill is doing, because I absolutely agree. I had a daughter who still cannot believe that her friends chose not to vote and weren't registered when they were supposed to be registered. It drives her crazy. She has that same feeling that you do. And so, again, thank you for bringing it forward. Any other questions? Yes, Representative.
Just a quick comment. When I ask a question, I'm ridiculed. When you ask a question, it's a great question.
I know. Isn't that exciting?
Is there in there, Representative?
Concealed.
And thank you both.
Okay. Next we have
Henry Kramer, David Williams, Janice Thompson. Might as well have three. We have three chairs.
Sure. Chair Rebel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Henry Kramer. I represent the Oregon Bus Project. We work on high school voter registration as part of our civic education and voter access work. I'd like to be on record saying this bill is awesome, and I hope to be the first person to be on record saying something as such. One of the problems we have in Oregon is we have a very high voter turnout rate, but an enormous youth vote gap. In 2004, we were tied with the state of Kansas for the largest youth vote gap in the nation between people under the age of 25 and over that age. And the biggest predictor of voting sort of across the country is prior voting. And one of the biggest predictors of if you're going to vote at all is if you're registered. Young people, like I said, have a large vote gap, but registered young voters voted at a very comparable rate to registered older voters. In 2004, registered young voters voted at an 82% rate, and registered voters over the age of registered voters in general, average I suppose, voted the 86%. So the margin is substantially less when you get into registered voters. So registration is the biggest impediment to young people voting, and this bill can help get them started early and keep voting. Like I said, the biggest indicator of you're going to vote in future elections is if you vote and won. So getting this started would be a huge boon for the state of Oregon. Regarding some concerns about cost, organizations like ours do this work already and would be more than interested to work with the Secretary of State of the Clerk's Office in trying to devise a nonpartisan education system that works with a public-private partnership if there's any way of allaying costs that way. And in first looking at this bill, I had some questions regarding staff time, district staff time, toward this. And I think it was really encouraging. One of the great things about having April's mind on this bill, and I want to really commend April for the excellent work she's done on bringing this bill here and having such a great bill, is that using student governments would be a huge opportunity. Having been in high school fairly recently, some years back, but not that far, student governments weren't doing a whole lot or always wanted to do more, and it strikes me that voting is better than throwing ice cream socials, and if you can be putting them to work getting their fellow students register. That would be excellent. Peer-to-peer is the best way to get people to vote, both anecdotally and statistically. And regarding your question, Representative Garrard, in terms of politicization, legally you have to register anyone who wants to register to vote. It's against the law. It's a felony to not allow somebody to register to vote with you who wants to register to vote. So that's at least one impediment toward politicization of such a process. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions afterward.
Thank you very much. We'll go through the whole panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association. I think this piece of legislation and Ms. Hill's work around this is a bright, shiny example of what we believe is one of the primary purposes of public education in the state and in this country, and that is not to create productive workers, but to create educated citizens who will be active participants in a democracy such as the one we have in this country. So I want to applaud her for her efforts. That said, we do have a few concerns about the legislation that I did want to get on the record. One is cost. I'm very encouraged by all of the conversation about allaying costs and the concern for driving up costs. Anytime we have a bill like this, I do want to take the opportunity to testify about the situation facing public education in the state right now. We have a model in this state that tells us how much the state should be funding public education in order to reach the goals that you all have put in statute. And at last biennium, which many saw as a watershed biennium for funding of public education, we were still nearly $1.5 billion short of funding the goals that would allow 90% of our students to reach standards in statute. So you can imagine that shortfall will become even greater given the economic crisis facing us today. So any additional resources and staff time is time that is pulled away from other areas in the school system. This is a zero-sum game in the education climate with which any additional requirements placed on us will remove resources from other areas. That being said, we would be happy to work with interested parties to make sure that we can allay most of those costs. I do want to highlight one area where the comparison with higher ed, community colleges and universities does differ, actually two areas, pardon me. One is that in the high school environment, of course, students are a captive audience. We do have mandatory attendance in this state. Students are required to attend high school, in the state. And so you're not dealing with the same kind of voluntary system as you are in higher ed, where students are more or less opting into attending that university or community college. So that does overlay a different dynamic. The other difference is that there are roughly two dozen public institutes of higher ed in this state, whereas we're talking about over 200 public high schools. While I believe that in a lot of cases, as was suggested by my colleague here, that peer-to-peer registration is the most effective, I do believe that in quite a few cases, a lot of the work of this legislation will fall to school administration, teachers and principals and other school personnel for ensuring that such a plan as crafted would be carried out. So we do have some concerns about that. As I read the bill, it seems to me that the highest cost would fall to a school-wide advertising campaign where student government associations do not undertake that task, and that's left to the school. That would generate some cost. We do have some concerns, as was mentioned, about training and security requirements over collections, et cetera. I'm not so concerned about distribution of registration cards, but collections of distribution cards, we would be very nervous about putting school administrators or school personnel in the position of having to collect and return those to various clerks' offices. But I do want to finish again by just saying that, reiterating our main point, and that is that we do believe public education is here to create educated participants in a democracy, and to whatever goals we can engineer that in that subset of our student population that is of registration and voting age, we want to help that happen within the current framework of the system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Janice Thompson with Democracy Reform Oregon. Support the legislation with three kind of main points. Do want to mention a few cautionary notes. But it's a very, very important bill. I mean, there is, for one reason, there is a youth voter gap that I think has long-term implications for our democratic process. The second is review of, like, the political science research does really indicate the importance of establishing a voter habit, and that habit development, I think there's just some real opportunities at the high school level to kind of start that process. And then third, I think this bill and April Hill's work on it is a really good example of this. This bill is really about connecting school to community, kind of the real world, which I'm interested not only from my current position, but in a past life, I actually worked as a teacher. And I just really saw again and again in the classroom is that when you can kind of connect something to how it's going to impact their life, it makes a difference. People gets their attention, and I think students really like things that have real world implications, and voter registration obviously does. In terms of some of the cautionary notes, one does come from having been a public school teacher and recognizing the difficulty that schools operate under, that, you know, are just, you know, getting more and more strapped in budget and whatnot. And it is really tough. I think the emphasis on interaction with the student government is a critical piece of the bill. At the same time, I think it'll take some time to develop, and there's just no way in which that won't cost some level of resources. So, which is not by any means not to do it. I think it just really means that there needs to be creative thinking about how to pull it off. And I think this could be a very, very good topic for a nonpartisan public-private partnership. There have been some academic research that have had really, like, good measurable outcomes in terms of things like increases of voter turnout down the line and whatnot, with some programs that are offered in high schools explicitly by non-school staff. I mean, kind of like, so it's kind of one-shot, you know, presentations. And so I think there's some really models out there that can achieve this goal and, hit the right balance in terms of workload and the cost concerns. So I would be happy to continue to work with folks on that. But it's a very, very important concept to move forward.
Okay. Questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For anybody on the panel, is the young voter gap growing, or has it just always been large, and then presumably at some point folks register to vote?
There are varying statistics on that. The most recent information that I have is that of, I believe, eligible voters in 2008, the gap remained substantial, although it looks like it shrank a little bit. It was a 28% gap of eligible voters in 2004, and as far as I can tell, something in the realm of a 20% gap now, but I can do further research and get you perhaps better information on that. A lot of the information that's out there is sort of general. It doesn't indicate registered or eligible, and it becomes hard to follow.
I would concur with Henry's statement that the research, the data is difficult to track down. But from my review of it, it does seem like there have been some successes. I mean, some narrowing of the gap. The 2008 presidential campaign that energized a lot of folks. But my review of the record of the data didn't indicate a shift in that gap in the Oregon elections, actually, between 2004 and 2008.
Representative Berger.
I don't know who is left to testify, but it occurs to me that this particular age group, we're talking 18 to 18-year-olds, basically, are going to are going to graduate from high school and change address, many of them, promptly thereafter. And they vote in an election then, and then they're going to be going off somewhere, and their ballots will be chasing them for a while until they settle down. I mean, it's a time in their lives where it's hard enough to find them. And I just wonder if this is, you know, creating more phantom voters because they, you know, they got fired up to register, maybe never voted, and then the clerks will be chasing them for a few years until they finally settle down somewhere to vote. It just occurs to me.
Representative Loveland, Representative Berger, I imagine that Janice will also be able to speak to this, but part of the virtue of doing it this early is the habit-forming nature of both voting and voter registration. So if you learn from an early age that voter registration is important and how to register to vote, it helps those young people then re-register when they move. There's some evidence to back that up, and I can give that evidence to you if you would like.
Paul?
Mr. Chair, I'm not terribly persuaded by that. As I said, if they're going to only vote maybe once, possibly twice, that's not a huge habit thing. But I get what you're getting at, that they would learn to register and learn how. It's sort of been my experience that it's registering to vote is one of those things that if you want to do it, it's pretty easy to find out how to do it. If you're not motivated to do it, there's pretty easy to find excuses not to do it. And I understand what you're getting at on this habit thing, but high school, sometimes it isn't habit, it's peer pressure, and that worries me a lot in this venue. In other words, it's cool to vote because somebody cool told me I need to register to vote, and that somebody cool might also tell me what kind of party I'm interested in voting in, and I worry about that being the habit that is formed, not the I really want to vote because this is personally important to me, and so therefore I'm going to find a way to vote.
Chair Edwards and Representative Berger. I think there's one. That's why one element in this is the online voter registration. I mean, in terms of using that tool, that's particularly well-suited to young people in terms of keeping that up to date. The other element is my understanding, and I think you have someone here from the Secretary of State's office who could speak more directly, but in the conversations that I've had with John Lindback after the passage of the bill focused more on higher education, is that there was some work done to develop a kind of accompanying material targeted to youth voters that met the compliant, kind of the bill, particularly the, there are consequences if you do something wrong, is in that piece. But also it clarified that, it gave people the option of registering on a permanent absentee basis so that even if they, so they could have registered and made sure that the voter registration kind of kept going to their home address as part of trying to just deal with that. So so people have been aware of it. I think those two things are a piece of it. I think your concerns that there could still be problems are accurate. I guess I don't see them enough as outweighing the not to do it.
Other questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, thank you all. Representative Jensen, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, maybe it's been a long time since I was in high school. I forget when it was now, as a matter of fact. So, I certainly remember peer pressure and having had some sons and daughters go through high school. I recall that peer pressure didn't always coincide with the philosophy of the family of origin. So I don't know. I guess that that's just kind of the way it is in our society. I guess I'm editorializing, Mr. Chair, and excuse me for doing that. But it strikes me that many schools, and you'd be, Mr. Chair, much better position to comment on this, since you're more familiar with high schools in recent years than I am. But I recall a phenomenon known as student government in schools, where we ran around, you know, kind of chasing our tails, trying to find some sort of meaningful activity that would somehow or another represent government. And quite frankly, I can't think of a better place, though I would concede that it is the school board's, the district involved, or should be the district involved's decision as to how this should come together. But I can't think of a better place for a project like this to take place. And as I recall, they even used to give credit of some sort for student government as being fulfilling part of the requirements of getting a high school diploma, not maybe a required course, but nevertheless fulfilling some requirements for that. So it would just seem like and it wouldn't occupy the entirety of the student government for the year, but it certainly would be a good exercise in democracy. It would acquaint the students with the process, and I find it an intriguing idea. And even though I understand the folks who represent the administration of schools are always looking for ways to try to get more money out of the state legislature, I am hard pressed to see the real financial cost to a district that would take place with this. And I don't know, you know, people from other places can tell me what the availability of online registration would be, but if there were, if and when we ever do have that fully implemented, which I would hope is sometime yesterday, it would solve the problem of who is going to handle and process the, and therefore remove from the school the one thing I see as a potential liability, and that is handling those slips of paper, because you cost you $200 a crack for every one you you lose. So it just looks like a good idea to me, and I would encourage us to move this puppy forward.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Yeah, any comments?
Chair Roblin, Representative Jensen, I'd just like to go on the record saying the bus project really likes the way that Representative Jensen thinks.
Thank you all. And our last person who will get to sit there all by herself, unless there's someone else out there who has been waiting to get up and testify, is Amy Wilson. But if there's anybody else that wants to accompany her and testify on this bill, and Harry just came in the door, so he could come right up there with Amy if he wanted. No.
Chair Roblin, can you make? Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Amy Wilson, and I am the Civic Engagement Program Administrator for the Secretary of State's office. So I can't tell you how excited I am that we're bringing this bill forward. Part of the work that I do for the Secretary of State is looking at where are voting populations, where the population is way below what it should be for registration. And one of the biggest problems is with young people, but more importantly, it's those 18 to 19-year-olds. They're about 50% below. I mean, you can get in the 20s and the 30s, but those folks are about 50% of them are not registered. Some of the stuff that folks had said earlier about this creating a habit, the data shows that that's pretty important. If you can get folks to do this one and two and three times, and you're making them a lifetime voter. We have looked at some programs and working with nonprofits because we were a little nervous about putting any additional burden on the schools around, you know, if this was going to cause some financial problems because of the budget being what it was. But there are some pretty great nonprofits out there, one being the Classroom Law Project, that's already doing some of this work, and so it might be that we can they're exciting. The extent that we can get them in the schools, they're ready and willing to go there. And then I just want to address that the registration piece of this is important, but it's the actual being in the schools and talking about voting that I think is critical. Secretary Brown and I have been traveling across the state doing mock elections, and you know, it's a wide range of where people are in terms of being aware of what's going on in their government and understanding voting and understanding how you can vote. And so that piece is pretty critical to just the civic education that we're trying to, that we want to get back into the schools and that we're trying to figure out how we can implement some sort of education program. And we would be happy to come up with some of the templates if that would defray some of the costs for the schools. We would be happy to do that. So hopefully they could just pick up the materials and walk forward with them. Thank you very much. I'll take questions.
Any questions? I guess the biggest one I have is the online registration going already that, like, Representative Jensen wanted?
It's on the way. on the way. But I think that's a great point. That does really address, and since, you know, folks have computer classes in their high schools, I think that is the one concern that made me a little nervous, but I think that will address it just fine.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have a need to put this on the record on this issue. Because I'm of the generation that grew up thinking you would be 21 before you had the responsibility to vote. And it's my clear recollection of marching in the street and saying, do not send my brother to Vietnam to fight a war before he even had the ability to vote. Okay? It was really important at that time because my brother spent a year in Vietnam. And to say to these students, oh, well, we're going to handhold you to the ballot after how hard we fought to get them to the ballot is insulting to me. The fact that these students have a 50% voting record because they value it so little makes me angry, okay? And it doesn't make me want to go into these schools and say, oh, kids, this is a great thing. You got to do it. We fought hard to give them this right. If they value it so little that we have to hand-hold them to the ballot box, they don't value it enough. And it doesn't mean enough to me. So thank you.
And I guess my question to you is, there are parts of this that have some concerns with respect to expense and so on that have come here. And I think it does have merit. I think that one of the things that we have not done as well in schools that we could is to draw the connections why it's so important for them to get out and vote. And it is only when you do it that it starts to make sense. And so having things in schools that connect to it are important. I'll talk to you later, Amy, and maybe with Ms. Hill, and we can look at this and see if there are other ways of doing this. But it isn't quite the mandate that it is, but it starts getting people into the schools to start with programs that really work. Because I agree with you in the Law Project and some of these others. They shouldn't have to struggle to get into our schools. There should be a way to get them in early and often so they can have these conversations with kids. In ways that I think might get them energized and engaged in doing it again. You know, schools end up with individual teachers who are really excited about this kind of stuff, and they have the conversations and they do the stuff, and it's really great, and they get large groups of their kids engaged in the process and doing things. But it's haphazard across the state. So figuring out ways and programs that engage student government, you know, we know that COSA has a student government person who could work with school districts and help kind of come up with programs with you and others so that we can start getting it out there so they know that they don't have to invent the new deal. But I would love to see if we can figure out something that would help engage this. I do understand Representative Berger's issue because I was one of those that got to vote when I was 21, my little sister was only a couple years younger, got to vote when she was 18. It was really irritating because I cared about voting and she didn't. And so, and that was then. So I understand that feeling about how hard a group of us worked at a different time and era to get the right to vote for people and how it hasn't seemed to carry on. So I understand all those feelings as well. But I would love to see us figure out a way to move this forward. So hopefully we can do that. Any other questions for this person? Thank you very much. And I'll talk to you some more. And we'll close our public hearing on House Bill 3473. Move this over here. Yeah, we do. We do have a quorum. We'll let you make a note. Do you want to make a motion? I have a, we have a possible introduction of a committee bill.
Okay.
And I think you've probably got copies of it in your list.
Yes, I do, somewhere.
And again, I want to make sure that people understand that we are just introducing this. That doesn't mean you're in favor or opposed it. But I would like you to look it over, and if you have suggestions, I would love to entertain them from any committee members about stuff. So, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 3760, dated 4/22/09, be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Berger moves that LC 3760, dated 4/22/09, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Moved. We'll introduce 3760, and it'll be back here in a little while. So look it over, and if you have suggestions, let me know between now and then. But I think it will be great. Okay. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3254. With that, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator, and then we have some people here to explain this bill.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3254 allows radio and data communication districts to be formed as special districts within all or part of one or more counties. The bill authorizes districts to acquire, maintain, and operate voice and data communication systems for use by public safety agencies within their boundaries. Authorizes districts to contract with the United States for acquisition and operation of radio and data communication facilities and related property. Takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment, sign and die. This bill was referred to the House Rules Committee by prior reference after public hearing and a unanimous due pass recommendation from the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services. The situation that prompts it involves Umatilla and Morrow County, where the Umatilla Chemical Depot is situated one of six Army installations in the U.S. that has stored and maintained the nation's chemical weapons stockpile. The Umatilla Chemical Depot is scheduled to cease operation in the spring of 2010. As part of the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, the U.S. Army acquired, maintained, and operated a tactical 450 megahertz ultra-high frequency communication system for on- and off-post communication for 31 local emergency responders. Federal funding pays 100% of the cost of the system during the operation of the Umatilla Chemical Depot. When the Chemical Depot ceases to operate, federal funding will also stop. However, the Army is expected to leave behind a tactical communication system valued at some $14 million that has been used and relied upon by Umatilla and Morrow County emergency responders. Proponents of House Bill 3254 assert the need to sustain current emergency response communications after federal funding ceases. House Bill 3254 provides a mechanism for Umatilla and Morrow counties to secure optional revenue streams similar to a fire district that would fund and govern the system's operation and maintenance.
Thank you very much. And we have Sean Halsey and Michael Roxbury. Great. Yep.
Please. Chair Roblin, committee members, for the record, my name is Mike Roxbury. I'm the fire chief of the Umatilla Fire District, and I'm one of the 31 agencies that uses the system. And I'm reasonably certain I couldn't sum it up any better than your committee administrator just did, so I don't want to rehash it. But the bottom line is there's currently no mechanism in the enabling legislation for special districts that allows for a radio district like there is for 60-some other types of special districts we could have. House Bill 3254 is an effort to get that amended to the point where we can form a radio district and then go back and try to convince our voters that they need to support the district. So we need 3254 so that we can go back and continue to do our jobs. Otherwise, quite literally, there is a multi-million dollar investment in federal dollars and in time on our part that's just going to go to waste. There's just no way we can individually afford to pay for that system. And it's become, like anything else, when it got built, it was so good, all the old systems just kind of went by the wayside. Nobody continued to fund or maintain their old systems because they didn't work in the first place in all cases. They were expensive, and they couldn't hold a candle to the new system that was built. So we'll really be in a situation if we're not able to get this legislation passed, and then further if we're not able to get the district approved by the voters. So this is our first step, and we need to get this legislation taken care of, and then we'll have to go home and do our serious work. Okay. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
Okay. We'll get both of you first, and then we'll ask some questions.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Sean Halsley. I work for Umatilla County Emergency Management. I'm the communications coordinator, and I manage this communication system for the 31 agencies out there in Umatilla and Morrill counties. I'd like to speak to the maps that were in the handout materials. Before CSET put this system in, every agency of these 31 agencies had their own radio system that covered their own little piece of the territory. They were in various states of repair and disrepair at the time. There was no interoperability between these agencies. When we had a big incident, you name it, the communications was a problem. You can see this, the next page, the seven sites that encompass the system today. With this system and these seven sites, we are covering the whole area. People across the two counties can talk to each other with the handheld radio, and all the radios that are on the system are programmed the same way, so a person can tell another person, whether it be fire department or police department, where to go within the radio's programming to be on the same channel with them. So it's a leap ahead as far as first responder, public safety effectiveness and officer safety in the area. The last two pages are the users of the system, which include U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and in the past, the FBI has been interested in talking to us on this system also. And the last page is the local municipalities that have signed resolutions of support for the special district to be created. Thank you. I'll take questions.
Any questions? I guess I have a couple. First, how would this interplay with the Owen system that we're trying to develop for our state police?
Owen is, I mean, we've talked with Owen, and we certainly have capacity in the system. Our system currently is used in some state microwave links, and I believe Mr. Ball is here, and he might speak to it better, but I think they're looking at something like a $4 million savings to Owen by being able to partner with us and use some of the existing equipment, sites, and facilities that we already have there when Owen builds its way out on the east side. And it's a help to us, too, because there'll be a partnership of maintenance and operation costs that we'll be able to share with the state for our part. So we certainly plan on partnering with Owen. We hope Owen comes, and we hope we can make it work.
How about the connection in the past? This is a federal program, so it included counties over in Washington as well. And it was a big one. Is that continuing? Will that continue? Or are we only worried here about Oregon's ability to keep their portion of it?
this, Representative Roblin, this system right now only covers Umatilla County and Morrill County. Benton County on the Washington side has their own radio system on a different frequency. So.
But we do have the ability to tie those together.
Right.
That we can, our system can talk to theirs. We can make that happen with the, Sean's the technical guy. He can make it work.
Okay. Representative Berger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is what happens when you win a Rolls Royce and and you got to maintain it. You got to find a mechanic who can fix it. So, Mike, I have no objection to this bill. By the way, I understand what you're trying to do. My kind of question is, how much is it going to cost to maintain this? And is it then the intention you would go to the voters in this district and say, this is how much it's going to cost to keep this going? And if they say no, then you'll fall back to whatever it is you've had. You'll sell out the parts and buy a Hyundai or something. I don't know.
You're absolutely right in that it's going to cost some money. You know, we're projecting about $700,000+ a year for ongoing operations maintenance and to build a reserve fund to replace the system components that are coming up to their end of their life cycle. For our voters, that means a new tax of 17 cents per thousand in the taxing district. And that generates enough revenue to keep the system operating and to keep it replaced as components become obsolete. So, yeah.
Representative Gerard.
Back in 1994, when Klamath was hit with the earthquakes, the number one problem was communication. I applaud what you're doing. It is the right thing to do. And God forbid, maybe someday it'll save some lives because you're doing it.
Other questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Not a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the folks for bringing this bill forward. This really is a win-win situation for the district. I mean, obviously, we've got a hurdle to cross in the state legislature. They have a hurdle to cross with their voters. I have a lot of confidence in the voters in Umatilla, Morrow County area when they're voting on something they know something about, that they know what's going on with it. And I'm not being flippant, I don't think, in saying that. I mean, they, like all of us, are always concerned when you're asked them for additional money for whatever it happens to be. But they also recognize there will be costs for them, maybe individually as different parts of the district there. But there's no way you can have public safety and not have some expenses involved with it. So I think the people we have that have put this in and been working with it have done an excellent job for us, and I would look forward to a long, prosperous, successful venture on their part. I would, with Mr. Chair, if he hasn't signed up, though, I would like to hear from on the ON thing, because that was initially one of my concerns when they brought the request to me to submit a bill, was how does that interplay with ON? And I don't want to duplicate our money. I want to save money. I don't want to, sort of thing. So, but that's all.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you both. Thanks for coming all the way over here, too.
Cheers.
We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
So with that, we have Eric Schmidt from the Association of Oregon Counties. Mr. Ball, do you want to come up, too? We'd love to hear. Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay.
I'll I'll be very brief, Mr. Okay. Chair. Thank you very much. Members of the committee, I'm Eric Schmidt. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and the Association of Oregon Counties is on record supporting HB 3254. Not only does it give Umatilla and Morrow counties an opportunity to maintain a valuable infrastructure that's already in place and to have the voters be able to do it, but it will also allow other Oregon counties the opportunity to create this valuable tool and that they will be able to use it to fund and operate their emergency communications operations in the future. We know of at least one other Oregon county that is interested in this model and is seriously looking at it. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay. Mr. Ball.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I work for Governor Kulongoski, and I'm assigned to the Owen Project. The question came up about the relationship between Owen and the Morrow and Umatilla County Public Safety Communication System. And I'm very pleased to say that we are partners with Morrow County and Umatilla County as we melt down the CSEP project. We agreed 3 weeks ago that there would be 8 radio sites that the Owen project would take over, and there would be 6 sites that Umatilla and Morrow counties would own and maintain. Now, to give you a little bit of background of what that does for the state of Oregon, without this type of a partnership, and I was forced to go out and build the sites myself for the state of Oregon in consolidating the 4 radio systems with ODOT, Corrections, State Police, and Forestry, I would spend somewhere between $500,000 and $600,000 apiece for each site. This is truly a savings for the state of Oregon, and a way that we can occupy and share sites saves money for the 2 counties as well. The question came up, will there be interoperability or opportunity to bridge the boundary with the state of Washington? That's easily accomplished. As Mike Roxbury mentioned, Sean can figure that out. Certainly can, and we do have a shared site with the state of Washington at Solusi that we could probably hardwire right to fairly easily. And those are in the plans with the Owen project in the state of Washington.
Okay. Any questions for these two? Thank you very much. I guess we do have a question that we got from Mr. Roxbury. Are there 7 sites or 6 that we listed? We just want to get the correct on our stuff. This is a bill that I'm interested in moving, and so we're going to carry over the work session to Wednesday. We probably won't work it today because I need to check on a couple things, but as soon as that's done, I see us moving forward on this bill.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Chair Roblin, the answer to that question is on the map that I've provided, there are 7 sites on there. Currently, there are 7 sites on the system that actually are broadcasting signal. The other sites that Director Ball referred to were places such as that are just microwave relay points or are dispatch centers, and this is talking about every site that's attached to the system. Where if on that map that I was presented, I was talking about just coverage of radio frequency signal in the area. The system only has 7 sites right now. We're building another one this year, and the one we're going to build this year will also be used by Owen. Okay. So we'll have 8.
Okay, that clarify that one? Not entirely.
Looks as if they're acquiring only 6 sites, and I'm still not confused. Is one of these not already built?
So I guess, which matter?
Have a pre-existing site. This is the bottom line.
Okay. The second page. We'll check on this one offline with you and make sure we have it correct. So.
Sure.
With that, and again, I did mention that we will carry over our work session on this bill to Wednesday. But we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill. Unless there's anybody else out there. I think I got almost everybody that was there to speak. So we're going to close our work session on House Bill 3254. And I think that's pretty much it for the day, unless there's any other issues that anybody wants to bring forward. I appreciate the work on committee bills and also these two. We'll let you know on the elections bill if we decide to move that one, but I think this bill is in pretty good shape. So thank you for that, and we will close our hearing, our rules meeting for today.